new reorganizing of the central government of the church in any way that would diminish the supreme authority of the Pope. The supreme authority of the Pope is the deepest element of the foundations of the church. Nothing could ever touch that.
I think that very many of us indeed are hoping that an outcome of the council will be that the Pope in future will welcome the advice of a body, a representative body of bishops from the whole world over, who could meet in Rome, not be in permanent session, I imagine, but be in Rome perhaps once a year, perhaps once only in 2 years, for a fortnight, 3 weeks or a month, to review current problems and to bring the Pope, therefore, immediately face to face with his episcopal colleagues throughout the world, short-circuiting the kind of screen which sometimes we've been tempted to think of as an iron curtain, which the permanent civil service, which we call the curia in the church, has interposed between the Pope and the local hierarchies.
Two voices, two poles of thought at the Vatican Ecumenical Council. Michael Cardinal Brown of the Roman Curia and Abbot Christopher Butler of England, representing the two opposing camps in the historic controversy in the Roman Catholic Church. The decisions here on church as well as secular matters such as marriage and birth control affect many people of all faiths.
This is a CBS News special report. Drama at the Vatican. The Bishops versus the Curia. Brought to you by Westinghouse. You can be sure if it's Westinghouse.
The bishops leave St. Peter's Basilica after the public ceremonies ending the third session of the Vatican Ecumenical Council. They are tired men. It has been the toughest and most wearing session of them all. 10 weeks of hard work and strenuous debate, of accomplishments and setbacks, of politicking, obstruction, and rebellion. 10 weeks that have brought many positive results, and then at the bitter end, an immense disappointment. It has been the session that has seen the greatest emotional tension and that has dramatized most clearly the cleavage in the Catholic Church, the conflict between the bishops and the Roman establishment, the closed and powerful little world of Vatican City. The drama of the council has been its sharp division into two great wings or parties, the progressives and conservatives. They are not parties in any strict or formal sense. There are no hard lines, no permanent divisions. But there is a broad mustering of forces, with a great majority calling for change, for reform and renewal, amid a ferment of new ideas for opening the church to the modern world. The bishops have met their entire church for the first time and have found that it is full of vigor and variety. The balance of forces has dramatically shifted. 2 years ago, the progressives had a working majority. Today, their majority is overwhelming. Their voice dominates the council on issues ranging from religious liberty to the problems of marriage to church government. The progressives do not always win. They suffered their greatest frustration at the end of this session when the old guard succeeded in blocking and postponing a vote on religious liberty. The old guard is still heavily entrenched in the Roman Curia, the church's central government. Its most formidable leader, Alfredo Cardinal Ottaviani, stands at the right hand of the Pope in the closing ceremonies. We will be interviewing the cardinal later. Yet the central struggle for power at the council ended with a sweeping progressive victory. The bishops declared and Pope Paul proclaimed that they, the bishops, together with the Pope, are the full and supreme rulers of the entire church.
Cetatis et tuius terre fili, sed supra tempus ad terram elati, ut anera fratrum suorum humeris suis accipiant, ut queas perducant a spiritualem salutem.
It's the famous doctrine of collegiality, and it opens the way for the creation of an international senate of bishops to assist the Pope in governing the Church. The conservatives fought it to the very end, arguing that it would undermine and endanger the papal primacy. It was a struggle all the way. More than 6,000 amendments were presented on this one issue, but the showdown vote was decisive. It was 1,927 in favor and 292 against. It may prove to be 1964's most important vote. After the bishops themselves, the most important men of the council are some 300 official experts appointed by Pope Paul. Among them is Father Gregory Baum, and we asked him what the progressives hope the results of their victory will be.
Until now, the Roman Curia, the administrative body of the Pope, has had so much power, and perhaps independent power, because the organization was so large that a single man, the Holy Father, was unable to survey the activities. And therefore they had to take many decisions which they took in competitive independence. Now, if there is a small council of bishops, then the Curia will be an executive organ, and they will have to render an account every year of the activity. And the bishops will have the right to ask questions. What happened there? And what did you do here? And this will remove the independence of the Curia, and they will become what they really are meant to be, an administrative body.
The question of the Roman Curia and its reform, of a shake-up and liberalization of the Church's central government, is a vital one for the life of the Church in the modern world. But the Council has also debated issues of more immediate and intimate concern to the men and women of today. And these, too, found the progressives and conservatives divided, especially on the question of marriage and birth control. Father Baum, could you sum up the new views put forward on the Council floor on marriage and birth control?
I could say a good deal about this. I will mention 2 points. In the first place, a number of cardinals and bishops criticized the traditional Catholic understanding of marriage in the sense that they say we cannot divide the aims of marriage, procreation, and conjugal love as primary end and secondary or subordinate end. These bishops said that the end of marriage includes both procreation and conjugal love. And if this principle is firmly asserted, then some of the proofs, so-called, which we have given in the past, that means of contraceptions are intrinsically immoral, will fall down. Secondly, the point was made that the sexuality in man is not biological or not animal, but is truly human. It is therefore not simply concerned with the procreation of the human species, but sexuality is a dimension of human life which, in addition to procreation, determines a man's relationship to others and his place in society. And for this reason, the morality of sexual activity must not be determined according to some biological considerations, as we have done this so often, but must be determined on human considerations. That is, the whole of married life and its orientation must be taken into account. And again, if this is taken seriously, it will modify considerably the traditional teaching of the Catholic Church on birth control.
Michael Cardinal Brown of the Roman Curia is a 77-year-old Irish Dominican who has spent 46 years in Rome. He is one of the most powerful men in the central government of the Church and an acknowledged leader of the conservative bloc at the Council. Your Eminence, do you think that out of this Council there may come some new approaches to the problem of birth control?
I'd hardly like to say that there could be. You see, the problem of birth control, the word birth control, as usually understood, it's a delicate thing to discuss, especially to discuss at the radio. Birth control is a problem. which of course, from a certain point of view, is legitimately in the hands of the married people themselves. It all depends on how they intend to exercise birth control. That is to say, if they don't wish to have many children, they're free to a certain extent with regard to that. But they're never free to arrive at birth control by any illegitimate method. That's the whole point. A young man and a young woman may marry, and they may, from very high religious ends, they may decide to abstain all their lives from intercourse. And that's birth control. Or they may decide, after having three or four children, that we have enough for the rest of our lives, we'll abstain from it. That's birth control. But what can't be admitted is birth control by any illegitimate means.
The consul has debated a declaration on religious liberty and a declaration absolving the Jews of responsibility for the death of Christ. The declaration on the Jews has been sharply opposed by Arab Catholic bishops of the Middle East. The American bishops have led the fight for both declarations and have often seemed close to victory, but have never been sure that they could make their victory stick, as Joseph Cardinal Ritter of St. Louis shows.
It has been very discouraging to us, American bishops, to understand why there have been delays. There, in regard to the first, of course, there could be, and there are, theological aspects that must be cleared. In regard to the latter, in regard to the Jews, we, of course, cannot understand why the council should allow itself to be in any way influenced by the political considerations that have been presented in opposition to the statement. It seems to us as American bishops that this is unworthy of the council, and that if we're going to allow this kind of thing to go on, then we're going to bring back the injection of the influence, the power of the state in the council. That the church no longer is free, that the council isn't free to express itself.
On these two fiercely disputed questions of religious liberty and the Jews, the council remained in uneasy suspense down to the very last hours of its session. The broad progressive trend of the council has been a surprise to nearly everyone, but the conservatives have greatly surprised many people also by the dogged resourcefulness of their rearguard fight, and by their ability and readiness to use all the dodges and devices of parliamentary obstruction. They are not men who give up easily. They are a small but strong-willed power bloc, and they rule the Roman establishment. The progressive bishops of the world have converged on the center of the church, the Vatican, in overwhelming numbers. They have burst upon it, but they have not taken it by storm. The conservatives still hold the citadel and still man the bastions. The conservatives hold the posts of command in the consul's machinery, for most of these posts have gone to prelates of the Roman Curia. The Roman cardinals are the Pope's general staff, and the Curia as a whole is the permanent civil service of the papal government. It dominates the church. With the confidence of their great vested authority, and with their long experience in the ways of the Vatican, the Curia leaders have fought off the progressive siege from well-prepared positions. The power structure of the council is labyrinthine and mysterious, but one fact stands out. The chairman of all the council's 11 legislative committees are Roman cardinals. And who are these men? First and foremost among them is a Roman of Rome. His name is Alfredo Cardinal Ottaviani. He was the son of a poor workman, and he was the 11th of 12 children. He was born in a back street in an ancient quarter in the shadow of the Vatican. And he was baptized at the parish church, Santa Maria Traspontina. He grew up in these streets, in the populous poor quarter of old Rome that is called Trastevere, meaning across the Tiber, the other side of the river. The children of these streets still know him well, a kindly and amiable figure. He rose to become a prince of the church, and under Pope John, he took a leading part in preparing for the Vatican Council. And it was he, in June of last year, who announced the name of the new pope and presented him to the crowd in St. Peter's Square.
Sante Romane Ecclesiae Cardinale Montini.
His office is in this 16th century palace, just outside the gates of the Vatican. This is the Supreme Sacred Congregation of the Holy Office, the congregation or department of church government which outranks all others. And Cardinal Ottaviani, as its secretary, is the official custodian of Catholic faith and dogma. And the motto on his cardinal's coat of arms is Semper Idem, always the same. In the council, he strenuously opposed the doctrine of collegiality, proclaiming the powers of the bishops. And now that the council has finally approved it, we asked him what he thought the practical consequences for the government of the church would be.
You see, there are no extraordinary results to be expected in the matter of collegiality, because collegiality was already in the possession of the doctrine of the church.
Your Eminence, as you know, there have been suggestions both inside and outside the council that the church may revise its teaching on the nature of marriage and on the ends of marriage. Do you think that this is possible or desirable?
You see, as to the nature of marriage and the ends of marriage, it is a doctrine based on natural law and also on certain expressions of the Holy Scripture. Therefore, it cannot be expected that the Church change its doctrine on the nature and on the primary purpose of marriage. When there is talk, for example, of pills which can almost intercept, almost interrupt the natural course of the conjugal act, on this there can be no doubt that the church will stand firm on its principles. Let us therefore wait and leave the church to carry out its ministry without wishing to anticipate the supreme authority.
The great storm at this council session broke on the day before it ended. There was no premonition of it. These pictures were taken on that day before the storm as the bishops were arriving. The council was scheduled at last to take its first vote on the Declaration on Religious Liberty, sponsored by the liberal Cardinal Bea. A declaration that was his work and that unquestionably has overwhelming support. The man who set off the storm was Cardinal Tisserand of the Roman Curia, the council's president. Without warning, Tisserand announced that no vote would be taken at this session because a group of bishops, about 120, had asked for a postponement, saying they needed more time to study the document. One official council expert commented, "Their aim is not to study it, but to bury it." Tisserand's announcement hit the assembly like a thunderbolt. The first to react after the initial shock of anger were the American bishops. They mobilized. They did something. They drew up a formal petition to Pope Paul, asking him to overrule Tisserand's decision. They canvassed the assembly for signatures. They amassed hundreds of them, about 1,000, and early that afternoon, the petition was in the hands of Pope Paul. Pope Paul refused to intervene. Reportedly, he explained that his hands were tied and that he could not act against the rules of the council. An American eyewitness of the storm was Monsignor George Higgins, one of the official experts.
Monsignor Higgins, what lesson would you say that the bishops, including the American bishops, have learned from this experience?
Well, I think it gave them a sense of the necessity of their acting as bishops in their own right. They were not in any sense defiant. They didn't intend to walk out of the council or defy the presidency, but it galvanized them into action in a way which I think promises some good results in the future. They realized, I believe, that there is such a thing as legitimate pressure and politics, if you will, in the best sense of those words, and that here was an occasion when they felt that they should group together, not only as Americans, but in union with many other bishops, to exercise their own authority as bishops, at least to the extent of making a protest against this decision. In that regard, I think it was a rather healthy development. I think there's no doubt that this delay and the disappointment, indeed the resentment that came with it on the part of many bishops, will help to bring out a much stronger statement in the end, or at least bring out a bigger majority.
Because of the sidetracking of the Religious Liberty Declaration, the council session ended on a sour note, a note of frustration that almost obscured its real and great achievements. Is the spirit of Pope John the 23rd prevailing at the Vatican Council? Is the council going the way which Pope John opened to the Catholic Church? The answer of most observers here is definitely yes. The progressives triumphed on the final day. The declaration on non-Christians, including the Jews, was thunderingly approved. A historic statement in which, for the first time on this high level, the Catholic Church reaches out, as Pope John wished, to address non-Christian peoples. The session produced two great decrees, which have turned the Church into the modern world beyond recall. A decree on Christian unity, which fully commits the Church to the unity movement and to an open dialogue with other Christian churches. And a revolutionary decree on the Catholic Church itself, enshrining the doctrine of collegiality, of the bishop's supreme powers, completing and balancing the old doctrine of papal primacy. And what about the Roman establishment? The progressives at the council learned a lesson last week. The resistance of the hardline conservatives, the delaying tactics, the infighting, and the setback on religious liberty have dramatized more than anything else how urgent it is to reform the Roman Curia and to end its domination so that this Catholic Church may indeed open its mind to the whole world. Many of the Council's decisions and wishes will be carried out and fulfilled outside the Council by Pope Paul himself. Whether or not there are new rulings on birth control, whether the dialogue with other Christians goes forward, whether the bishops take control with the Pope in a new international church government, all of this and more will depend on Pope Paul. He is a modern and reforming Pope, but he is subject and sensitive to many pulls and pressures, as the third session has shown. All will depend on how energetically he acts on the wishes expressed by the bishops in council. He is the first bishop. It is his council. It is for him to make of it what he wants. The full test of his leadership is still to come. This is CBS News correspondent Winston Burdett at Vatican City.
This has been a CBS News special report. Drama at the Vatican. The bishops versus the courier.